Wait, hold on a second. It's becoming more expensive for us to live in the very area that these people are visiting. This whole thing of Western Cape government lobbying, I mean, come on.
Leave Western Cape alone. They're a country. They pay to stay. They buy things. So you're collecting money two ways. You just want to add the third one by adding tax.
Welcome to the Angle Podcast. This is something we've brought to you where we go behind the stories that are published in our publishing partners, the Mail and Guardian and the Daily Maverick. And myself, Earl Joseph, and Stanley Molota over here, my colleague, we get to talk and disagree and agree and shout at each other about interesting things. Stan!
The coolest grey beard in town.
Indeed. How are you, sir?
Oh, good. Cold, but I'm all right.
How are you? Well, I'm just happy that here at Amped Studios, Tabiso the barista managed to give us, what do you call this? Our initialed coffees.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you know, in Starbucks, they write your name. This dude puts it in the form.
Do you know the brand is Black Earth? The brand that gave you the coffee.
Okay. Mm. Cool. All right, so let's jump in, my friend.
Let's go.
It's another cold day in Joburg, and locals drown in digital nomad wave. All right?
Nomad.
Right, so this was written by Sarah Smith in the Mail and Guardian in the last couple of weeks.
Sure.
Now, I liked this. I know I chose this story. I liked it because, one, I used to work in tourism, and two, I've been a digital nomad. So, and I'm not so sure I buy entirely into the angle of the story. So basically,
before you go further, what is a nomad? Maybe let's start there.
What's a digital nomad, or just a nomad?
Nomad.
Well, it's somebody who moves around.
A hunter.
Well, nomadic means you settle in multiple places, you do what you need to do, then you move along, and then you do...
It's like a private school way of saying a hunter. You are a hunter. You're just moving around, gathering whatever you're gathering, right?
I suppose, but you're from the rurals, right?
Mm, hence I'm...
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
So it's a fancy way of saying
I'm a city boy. I have no concept of what hunting looks like. It makes me upset.
Don't come here.
Okay, but look... This whole thing is about this concept of people moving around the world.
Right.
Working from different places. And depending on your perspective, it can be cool. So if you're a nomad, I imagine that's a pretty cool thing to be, right? Being able to, I don't know, as one of our colleagues told us today, Tahiri was saying that when he was in Bali, he found a whole bunch of Australians and English people who had been there for like 10 years.
He also did say they were naked.
He did say that.
He did. I'm not sure what part of that is cool, but he did say they were
well,
naked.
Well, clearly they thought it was cool to be able to do some digital work and then run some kind of weird retreat.
Imagine.
But the idea is that people get to go around the world, work from different places.
Yeah.
And it's a new kind of tourism, right? Now, as somebody who used
to...
Well, if you define tourism as people who visit, right, or travel, so you'll get, okay, so I used to work at the Gauteng Tourism Authority in a previous life, and this whole thing of meetings, incentives, conferences and exhibitions, and the idea of working travel, right? This takes it to a kind of different place. It's not quite the same, but it's the idea that you can take your laptop, as long as there's connectivity, you can move to a place that's sort of fairly cheap to live in, earn your dollars and your pounds and your euros, and then spend in the local currency.
I see.
Right?
Okay.
So at face value, it's amazing. You can be like in the Caribbean or in Bali, as Tahir was saying, and you can live fairly comfortably without having to earn a truckload of money.
Right.
Right? Because if you had to live in a place like Switzerland or wherever, you'd
have to pay a lot.
Cost of living is quite high. So at face value, it seems like a good idea.
What's your problem with it? What issues do you have with this thing?
And I think, okay.
Is it a sophisticated way of saying migrant labor?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
All right, but before we get there, what's your problem with this thing?
So, well, it's not just my problem. I mean, even Sarah brings this up in the story where they kind of weigh up the pros and cons.
Sure.
Right? So on the pro side, you know, you get all these people who are saying, well, it brings foreign investment into the country, that's mm-hmm. into the local economies. Tourism is always a good way to attract investment or revenue into a community. But then the local residents say that it has a kind of unintended consequence on them.
Right.
Right. So, for instance, I think she mentioned that in places like Mexico City.
Yeah.
Where,
Portugal, I think.
Hey.
Mexico, Portugal as well.
Yes, Portugal. That's right. That's also where she was. Lisbon. Right? So Mexico City and Lisbon.
Right.
And this idea that what had happened was, with the advent of Airbnb, what happened? Long-term rentals spiked. The cost of long-term rentals spiked because short-term rentals...
I'm not being rude. I'm just verifying the story.
So then the idea is the locals all went, wait, hold on a second. It's becoming more expensive for us to live in the very area that these people are visiting. And then you have this issue of what they call gentrification. I don't know if you know what gentrification means.
Yeah, basically just moving in and making the cost of living there high, especially around rental, right?
Right, but it's also just changing the look and feel of a place
to
try and attract a different market, basically.
Right,
so
right.
Kind of zhuzh it up a bit, right? So I wasn't so... So when I thought... I mean, I hadn't really thought of it that way because... Yeah. You know, we always just kind of think, okay, tourism, good. You know, like how, what's his name? Frankenstein say fire bad. You know, you just say tourism, good, right? You don't even think about it. And then what really irked me was when it got to the point where suddenly South Africa in, I think it was February this year, decided they wanted to create a visa, a digital nomad visa.
Wasn't that president in 2020? He did say that
2020.
His administration would be looking into that. I think it was
in February of this year. The amendments, the draft amendments were made to the immigration regulation, and then this nomad visa came into play, which I think basically said that you can come in, you can work for 6 months.
Right.
And I don't know if you can remember. Did it include the tax issue?
You will get taxed. You have to register for tax. But
was it for 6 months?
Yeah. The issue with that I have is, so why do I need to register for a nomad visa if I can just come here on a tourism visa and stay for 6 months and not contribute to the tax?
The tourism visa is 3 months.
Well, I can extend that.
That's also true.
So why do I need the nomad visa? I'll stay in your country for a year or two, and you'll exempt me for some taxes. Then this nomad visa suddenly makes sense.
Well, it's according to the UN World Tourism Organization, they said 39% of the countries that have these visas do give tax exemption.
Right.
But what does that mean? I mean, one of my issues was in South Africa, the reason this thing came up, guess who lobbied for it?
Who?
Where do you think? The Western Cape.
Oh, yeah. They do say Cape Town is like a haven for nomads.
Yeah, but again, I look at it and I go, if you really want this to work, you should be able to create incentives for people to move into other areas. The Western Cape already is like what?
Right.
Cape Town is the number one city tourism destination in the world.
Which makes sense why nomads would go there.
Another regulatory boost to their tourism. You need that in places like Mpumalanga and Limpopo and the Eastern Cape.
So do you believe it contributes positively to the tourism market? Is it an add, or does it take away from the tourism market in South Africa? Firstly, you come here, you are here for 6 months or whatever duration. You may not be paying tax, but if you're a tourist, you want to travel a bit, you want to engage the cultural activities around, and then you're spending a bit of money there. Are you saying that exempting this guy for tax in replacement for them buying local goods, are you getting more from the tax than you are in them stimulating the local market?
Ish. That's a difficult question. I didn't think about that. You're right. I mean, that's a good equation to consider, right?
So, which is why 39% of those countries would exempt them for tax, because they understand you're a tourist in the first place. The plus is you get to work here. Now, we don't want to punish you for being a tourist and saying, you're a tourist, pay tax. Like, be here for what you were here initially for. However, whilst you're here, explore the country, see the nice cultural activities we've got. Like in South Africa, we've got like a lot of cultural things one can explore. And whilst you're there, you're going to want to buy something. Now, do we have a market enough for them to partake in buying, so we can get a lot from them as opposed to taxing them? Then let's drop the tax and let them buy in the local markets. Let's extend the 3 months, okay, the six, okay, months to 12 okay, months to a year.
So I'm going to take you to a little bit of a segue here, right?
Sure.
So you know my experience as being a digital freelancer with a global company, right?
Mm-hmm. And did you bad, may I add?
What's that?
They did you nasty.
They did. Mm. But that's a different thing. But what it does do is it also brings into question for me, like, what is the jurisdiction, right?
Right.
So in my case, I was working for a company outside of the country. So I wasn't really a tourist because I live here.
You were here.
Right. I already lived here. But I was working. But then when we had a conflict, and then I tried to invoke some sort of legal response,
yeah,
to them terminating my services, then it became a problem, because now suddenly you've got this jurisdiction issue, right? They're based in London. I'm based here. How do I go and get my money from them?
Yeah.
When I tried to do it here, it became really expensive, right? So the next question is, if you're exempting them from tax and they bounce, or if you don't exempt them from tax and they bounce, how do you collect that tax? Or how do you police them? Like that.
Which is why you need to exempt them. Do not get them to pay tax. So they have freedom of movement. They come in and go as they wish. Now you tie them to tax. Now they leave. Now where do you file the lawsuit? How do you get to them? What law applies? The local one or the one where they're from? Then that becomes very tricky. Which is why you need not make them pay tax, so that they have freedom of movement. They can come here, do business, and leave. They can come and stimulate the local economy. Off they go. Without having to be tied to anything. Because once you tie them to a lot of these things, now it's, I need to go visit this country, but there's this red tape.
Yeah, but that's, I think we're moving. I'm still not convinced.
Worse.
I'm still not convinced.
Yeah.
About encouraging digital nomads in that way.
Okay.
I mean, the article specifies, or rather kind of goes, well, you know, the market will be the market. It will do what it does. And I don't really get that, because if you can't intervene in some way to direct, particularly from a regulatory perspective, right?
But how do you intervene from a regulatory perspective without stifling tourism? Because by creating those systems in place, now suddenly if I want to visit, I'm like, but do I have to go through all of this just to visit your country?
No, I'm saying, well, you can visit our country. There's no issue there.
Do you know what you're going to have?
What?
An influx of people coming in, because there's a market to do this thing, and they'll do it illegally, as we do with illegal foreign migrants. because there are no, because Wes, this nomads thing, they could do it for entrepreneurs. Now, certainly you could document a lot of foreign internationals. If it applied,
I suppose, I mean, I look at Estonia does that, right?
But now we don't do that. We don't even do it for entrepreneurs. But we have an influx of entrepreneurs who are foreign nationals here, who are not documented, who are not even taxed. So it does not benefit the country anyhow.
Yeah, for me, I have to say, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm always kind of straddling. For me, the issue is, and I think it was in the other paper that was written on the fact that it's not the technology.
Yeah.
That should drive the structure of your society. Your structure of your society
should drive
the technology and the implementation, and the structure of the society should also impact the regulations around the technology and its use, right? In this case, being a digital nomad coming in here, you are impacting the structure of the society.
How?
Well,
by getting rentals up?
The rentals up. The one of the other issues they were talking about was you get foreign direct investment in the property development in those areas,
right?
Which then marginalizes the existing community,
right?
Right. So it becomes much more expensive to live in that area, much more expensive to rent in that area. The prices of goods go up. The prices of services go up. I remember, okay, now I'm going to...
The article does say that a lot of people on socials are taken to that.
Right.
They're protesting, I can't live
in the area.
But that's a regulatory problem.
That's what I'm trying to say. What sparked this whole conversation was the issuing of the visa, the amendment of the regulation.
Yeah, but it's how they do it, right? It's not that they shouldn't do it.
I don't know. Okay, so that's one way to look at it. I like the idea that if you're going to do it, if you're going to actually put a nomad visa in place, it has to come with and I'd like to use it to push people into areas that are underserved.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
This whole thing of Western Cape government lobbying, I mean, come on.
Leave Western Cape alone. It's
a problem for me. It's a real problem for me that, you know, the government then creates this thing because the Western Cape government says so. For me, that doesn't work. The government should really be regulating to spread that tourism dollar around.
So where would you reckon that regulation should come from? National or provincial? Like Western Cape should regulate.
No, it's a national imperative. That's why the Western Cape lobbied. They lobbied the national.
But is it fair? Because the dynamics in Western Cape may not necessarily be the same as in Limpopo.
Well, if the Western Cape is lobbying for a national change or amendment to the legislation,
right,
that affects Limpopo because now Limpopo is affected by the very same thing.
The question
is, why
at a provincial level do we have the power to do that? Could we do that?
It's not about it's about the fact that Limpopo should say to when the amendments were
proposed,
or the draft amendments were proposed.
Yeah.
Limpopo should have said, listen, it's a great idea as long as people cannot just stay in one area for the entire duration of so move people around. I mean, it's in the name, nomad.
Moving around.
Move around, right? If you're going to be here, you can't be here for longer than a month.
Then you're
going to move. I don't know. I might be oversimplifying it, but there is something in it. And I didn't like the way the angle of the story, which because it ended where it said the pros outweigh the cons. That for me is a very privileged standpoint.
Don't they though?
Hey?
Don't they?
Listen. When I was working at Gauteng Tourism, I can tell you, packing a bunch of people from flea markets who make trinkets and flying them over to an international conference, right? And then bringing them back, did absolutely nothing for them. I know this because I was part of the decision to do that. Because so I was developing one of the privileged
that
ones.
That area around Vilakazi Street and maybe creating five-star accommodation around those areas, does it not stimulate the economy of Soweto?
No, not necessarily.
Where do they buy?
No, because if you want five-star accommodation, you're not going to Soweto.
No, I'm just saying, because that is a tourism attraction, why not create a safety around that area so that the tourist understands that they've done that, but what I'm saying is
that when people create these programs,
yeah,
they're coming from that trickle-down mentality. Exactly what you say.
Right.
If you do this, the money will filter. But nobody considers the fact that the money might filter down, but then the prices go up, right? So it's a balancing act.
Yeah, which is why I guess again it just comes down to policy. How do we legislate around this? How do we create government policies that make sure that the society interests are protected as much as we make it easy for the tourists to come in, stay, not pay tax, work, contribute to our economy, and go. Because you have two collection points there. They pay to stay, they buy things. So you're collecting money two ways. You just want to add the third one by adding tax. Now focus on those two and maximize on those. And let them have the freedom of movement, but just create legislation around this pricing going up and suddenly I'm from Soweto but I can't afford to live in Soweto. Create protection around those things and nomad visas are perfectly fine.
Really?
Because go as far as creating visas for entrepreneurs.
Okay.
Then our foreign brothers are no longer a problem.
Wait, hold on. You say create protection. One of the key issues here is Airbnb.
Ish.
Now you want to create protection, right?
Yeah.
By Ish. Saying
Airbnb is a problem.
I can't Airbnb my house in Soweto because now the price,
yeah,
if I had to offer my house or my room or whatever in Soweto, right,
interesting,
my long-term rental,
right,
would be 2,000 rand,
right,
but if I Airbnb it, my long-term return is 10,000 rand.
No, but there it's a question of creativity. So clearly I can't compete with a five-star hotel that would have built there. Now I have to create something different from that would attract tourists. And then I can put my prices up.
No. What I'm saying is ordinarily that room as inventory, as stock,
right,
would get me 2,000 rand a month in local rental. If I rented to somebody here in my area, it would cost 2,000 rand.
Right.
Now I list it on Airbnb, I can charge 2,000 rand a week.
Right.
Right? 2,000 rand in dollars is nothing. So some sort of hippie kid with a laptop and, you know, decides they want to come and stay there. They're working for some international company. They want to come to Soweto. Now suddenly, one person, you know how this works in the township, right? I sell sweets here.
Yeah.
You sell sweets there. Every room goes onto Airbnb. What happens to the person who would have depended on that room for 2 grand?
Wait, the problem is that the two grand is monthly, now he gets it weekly?
That is the problem. That is exactly the problem. So what happens is then these next thing you've rented out.
My math is not matching. I was getting 2K a month. I'm getting 2K a week. That's a problem?
Yes, it's a problem.
How so?
Not for the person who's renting out the room.
Oh,
it's for the overall price increase. So suddenly, I'm saying to you,
right,
I sell suites here, you sell suites there.
Right.
I Airbnb here, I Airbnb there.
Right.
Suddenly, you've created that gentrification that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so suddenly, but by the way, this person goes to the local restaurant.
Yeah.
Where that meal used to cost 50 bucks, it now costs 200 bucks because that person who's coming is spending dollars. Now the locals are excluded from their local economy. That's what all of this protest is about. It happened with I'm going to bring in my football thing here.
Hey.
Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
Right? North London, White Hart Lane, known for the fact that it is a lower middle class area, working class people, blue collars. They drop a brand new stadium at £2 billion.
Right.
What do you think happened to the property prices, the rentals, the jobs? The local community were up in arms because now suddenly they couldn't buy at a shop that was across the street from their house. So it's the angle you're coming from. If you are the investor and if you are the beneficiary of that, of course it's a great idea. And it's very easy for these people from the Western Cape to go and say, well, you know, it drives up the economy. It's so trickle down,
etc. So if Airbnb is the problem, why don't we just kick Airbnb out?
Ha, ha, ha. Now it's overregulated. Right? Now no, there's no just, space.
we just create another platform and but, we make sure we, like again, back to policy. If this thing is a problem, then take it out. Let's have something that's a solution.
But what it does kick up is this idea that this global digital economy has unintended consequences and we can't be blind to that.
The problem is we are reacting to it. This thing is already happening. This thing will continue to happen. Again, our friend Tahir did say, there are guys in Fortsberg who are creating some form of a Starlink. Starlink does not have license here, but there is a form of Starlink here happening.
Yeah, but that's under the legal and policy radar, right? Regulatory. Right,
but this thing will happen regardless.
Yeah, but I think it's a difference. And this is, we need to close it up now because Kevi
Is she cracking the whip?
She's giving us the evil eye. The thing for me is, there are enough people who understand these dynamics.
You barely touched your coffee.
Yeah, that's true.
You're talking a lot.
There are enough people out there mapping out the statistics and the data to see the implications of this. Right? But we're turning a blind eye because, as we normally do from a regulatory point of view.
And because we're being reactive. We need to be proactive.
Well, sometimes I don't even think we're being reactive. I just think the privilege to make the decisions. Yeah, I'll leave it
like
there.
EFF again.
Eh?
Sounding like EFF. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching the Angle Podcast. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share. The link to the article will be in the description below. Be sure to check out our other shows for Frame of Reference and the election series. We just concluded the election series with Tyrisha Vet School of Governance. And the beautiful finisher that you see here, it's thanks to the Daily Store. Joey, we see you. Thanks.